and we're talking about what we're talking about, I sound the way I sound, you sound the way you sound, you look the way you look, but to you,
it's a totally different thing.
Maybe, yeah, I might look, I might be 7 feet tall and 18 feet wide to you.
But
I might sound like a little bird, yeah, you know, like,
and I
completely
would,
different.
And because I don't know how you see things and can't, I don't know there's any difference.
And there is no possible way to determine for sure what that is, what the reality is that each person is seeing, because no matter what we say or do, it's being perceived in a completely different way by the person that's receiving.
And to the heart of that, it's why I reject so vehemently postmodern thought.
I'm Don Hall.
And I'm David Himmel.
And this is the Literate ApeCast.
Uses bad words. If you don't like bad words, maybe shouldn't listen to it.
I want to talk about the Haktua girl.
Yeah, I love
her. I've been meaning to write about this. And
it's a fucking phenomenon. I read about it because I didn't know who. When you said that today, when you texted, I had no fucking clue what you were talking about. So I looked it up. There is a whole article on her in Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone, yeah.
Yeah, and I read that. I went, oh, that's, you know, it's a rags to riches story in the age of social media.
And it's, so the whole thing, it's a blowjob thing.
Yeah, she was making a joke.
Yeah. And which, like, fine, whatever. And she's going to make a shitload of money off this and whatever. Like, good for her.
Yeah.
Great. The thing that's upset me about this...
Oh, you're upset about it.
I'm upset by it. Is that when this first happened, what, like 2 weeks ago, whenever this thing...
Yeah. Like I said, I don't pay attention to
it. There was all this shit going around, like, you know, imagine what her dad is doing right now, or what if this is your daughter, and this, like, this really, like, shaming the this antiquated idea of, my daughter ain't gonna... have sex with boys, you know, when I meet a boyfriend, I'll be cleaning my gun type bullshit that we do to our daughters, which is so fucking stupid and antiquated. And I just kept thinking, like, if it was my daughter, I'd like to think that I would be proud of her because she knows how to please a man. And I want my children to make their partners happy. So we need to get past this idea of the pure daughter who never touches a penis. Like, look, guys, look what your wife did to you. You know how she got you? She was giving you blowjobs in the morning, and she tricked you into marrying her because you're like, well, I'm going to get blowjobs every morning. And then she stops blowing you. You want your daughters to suck dick because guys like that. So stop with the shaming. Stop with the, oh, my daughter.
Well, I think the problem, okay. I hear exactly what you're saying. I'm not as frustrated by the antiquated, because the thing, this is, and maybe this is why I'm going to have to become like an evangelist or something, because my whole, and I personalize this. My whole thing is be different.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you go to the pathology of, all right, well, I was the new kid every year for like 8 years in a row.
Yeah.
Right. Different school. And so reinventing myself to kind of fit into a new profile was always just the thing I did.
Yeah.
And what I always landed on was, let's look at everybody in the school and how do I stand out? Well, be as different from everybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, reject the orthodoxy or whatever. Don't conform to their bullshit. That's it. Here's the thing. I am a foul-mouthed, rude, obnoxious man.
Yeah.
If women can be just as foul-mouthed and obnoxious and grotesque, I have to do something different to be special.
Okay.
No, I did. The thing about it, what I liked about her, and that was the thing, is what I thought was best about that article was, she didn't really expect fame. She was making a joke. And I watched the video, and she's not being gross. You can see she's making a joke, and she thinks it's, and she giggles, and she thinks it's very funny. And let's be honest, you're going to spit on the dick. yeah, that's how you do it. You know, it's like, you know, all right. It just was a funny joke. It's a joke that you and I would tell. Yeah. But what I really liked about her, she seems really pretty grounded about the whole thing. She didn't expect fame, but she wants to try to figure out how to make. She was offered a spread in Playboy, said no. She's not going to do an OnlyFans. I mean, you know, she's just. How do I make
she's
this?
She's seizing opportunity.
She's seizing.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Hope that her dad
she's
is
from
proud.
This town in Tennessee that's like 700 people. So this she wrote her, she flew for the first time.
Oh, wait, see, yeah. I read the article.
Yeah. Wow, first time she'd ever been on a plane. First time she'd ever been inside a stadium, let alone on stage at a stadium.
See, do you see what blowjobs can get you?
This is what I'm saying.
They get you very far in life.
They get you very, well, sure.
She's doing better than we are.
Well, that's true.
And we've never sucked a dick.
Speak for yourself. I thought it was... I like the Hawk Tua. You know, it's like she just... I just think it was... Because there... I just watched this thing. It's a documentary called Fantastic Machine.
Okay.
And it's a documentary, in fact... Is it? It's not one of my. It's not one of my six things. Anyway, it's a documentary that I saw on Canopy. And the title comes from the King of England. It's a great fucking documentary because it starts off when they discovered photography. You know, they show you the tintype of the very first like actual photograph, which I didn't know means paint with light.
Okay.
You know, which makes sense, you know, and it took like 10 hours for this one static image, right? And then they show you the very first when they finally got the processing. So it was like 10 minutes. They showed you a picture of the very first picture of a human being photograph.
Which was what?
It was a street scene that this guy just shot out his window, but it caught a guy on the street corner getting his shoe shined. Okay. So it's very blurry, but it's obviously a human being. It's like, all right, so that was the first one. So it's really talking about, it starts there. It ends with where we're at now, where there are 45 billion phones and cameras, 45 billion cameras in the world. And that there are 500 billion hours of footage uploaded every single day. And just like, right.
That's
and
insane.
It's really sort of like the history of the picture, you know, photographs. But the title comes from, you know, I don't remember what the timeline was. I didn't memorize the fucking timeline, but the King of England was being coronated and they hired this one guy that had figured out how to do moving pictures.
Okay.
They wanted him to do the coronation, but they would not allow him at the coronation. Okay. So he did a recreation of it with French actors that was then released to the British public as the thing on the same day that the king was being coronated.
Huh.
And so it wasn't the same thing. And the king was, he said, this camera is a fantastic machine. It will show you things that didn't even happen.
Ah.
And that's kind of that sort of thing is the gist of at one point they show there was an earthquake in Haiti, right? And they show this very famous picture of a dead woman. Well, I mean, she's all by herself, you know, it's like this landscape and it's just this dead Haitian. And the Swedish photographer took the picture and it became the picture that everybody ran as this was the aftermath of this. Okay. Fucking earthquake.
Yeah.
Well, then they say, but what you don't see is, and they're trying to make this point pretty aggressively throughout the thing. What you don't see is what was going on from the photographer. What you don't see is where the context lies.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see a picture of her having her photograph taken. She's dead. And there's like 45 photographers all squatted down taking a picture of her.
Yeah.
And that changes the original picture because it's this solo figure. It's just a completely different kind of context.
Yeah.
They interview Lenny Rich. They didn't interview her, but there was an interview, a good chunk of interview with Lenny Riefenstahl. That was the one who did Triumph of the Will. She was Hitler's cinematographer, right? Yeah. And part of what made Hitler and the Nazis seem grandiose was that she was a brilliant filmmaker. Mm. What's really interesting is they start the interview, whoever's interviewing her, start the interview and they're like, yeah, you're not really a political person. So how do you edit? How do you deal with a political message? And she didn't look at any of the politics of the Nazis, because this is long after they were defeated.
Yeah.
She's old, but she's, and she's watching this movie with Hitler and the Nazis in it. And the whole historical context means nothing to her because she wants to talk about how well she edited yeah. and look at the camera technique she did yeah. and that it looks like it's ballet. And I mean,
wow,
it's like, that's so fucking crazy. And it really was, you know, and then of course it gets, they had a lot of found footage and the Hawk Tua girl, what I think, you know, we're at an age right now where you don't have to have any talent. You don't have to be smart. You don't have to be interesting. You don't have to really do anything but film yourself in so, or be filmed mm-hmm. in some way and catch the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
You know, they talked about this one woman who, very heavy black woman, standing on a coffee table, filming herself singing in her apartment.
Cool.
And then she trips and fucking falls like a house of cards.
Yeah.
And she wanted to, she had no intention of anybody seeing it. But she puts it on YouTube so her sister can see it. And it becomes an overnight yeah. viral sensation. Jesus. And it changed her life.
Yeah.
I don't want to give anything away. I absolutely think you should watch this. It did not change her life for the better.
Okay.
You know, I mean, and it's this double-edged sword of this live streaming, and then it's also this complete misinformation, the way you manipulate images to get people to see what you want them to see.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was really fascinating. And what they think is so funny about the Hawk Tua girl is because she's Gen Z, because she's grown up with this,
yeah.
she's handling it, I think, very maturely mm-hmm. because she understands the comet that she's on. She didn't expect yeah. it. It wasn't yeah. coming. She didn't know. But she understands that there's an opportunity. And I also get from the interview, she understands this isn't going to last.
Right.
This is just cash in.
While you can.
Yeah. Get your cash while you can.
Yep.
And, you know, it just, there was one on this, in this documentary where it's just like this blonde, kind of Asian looking little girl, a woman, British, who very pretty, but pretty in that sort of like, I dress up like an anime character way, yeah. right? and she's telling this story about how she became a viral success, that she knew there were lots of pretty girls on TikTok and she wanted to stand out. So she started doing things, stupid things like taking an egg and cracking it in her mouth, but doing it really sexy.
Yeah.
Like she'd all sexed up, but she's doing stupid shit. Like she took a plastic dog toy hamburger and was biting on it and squeezing it, but she was doing it real sexy.
Yeah.
She took off. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, and now she's doing an OnlyFans and is going to try to figure out, you know, she teased in this interview, she teases that she's going to be doing her first hardcore video and that you can buy it on OnlyFans. And it's like, she's going to make a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
And that's weird. You know, it's weird for me because that was never a reality when I was
that's the thing. That's what it is now. There's something for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, you don't have to go to school or be trained or you just do your weird shit. And people will flock to it.
Well, it's the ultimate Dada.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate anti-art.
Yeah.
It is. Is this art?
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, reality TV, this is also fascinating. Talk about reality TV. One of the first uses of the motion picture camera for money was not a movie. It was not a story. It was literally two British guys that would go to huge crowds and film the huge crowds and then charge people to see themselves on camera.
Well, yeah, because at the time,
it's that the was a, ultimate, it's yeah. the ultimate reality TV. It's the beginning of what reality TV is.
Well, but it's also people want to see themselves.
Yeah.
It's we this, want to it see ourselves. It
captures this narcissism. Yeah.
On screen. Like we just, I mean, Harry now, like I'll take a picture or video of the boys playing or whatever it is. And Harry will say, let me see it.
Yeah.
You just want to see yourself. They love looking at photos.
We look in the mirror all the time. Yeah.
Shit, when I was a kid, like we would watch, especially my brother Steven, like he loved watching old family movies as a little kid. Yeah. So he would just get the VCR, you know, get the tape, stick it in the VCR and just watch family Christmases from 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever it was. And there was a time, like Clark
W. Griswold in Christmas Vacation.
Yes.
He dressed up in old lady's clothes.
Doing that at a really young age. And I remember my brothers and I getting into a really dumb fight because Steven was saying that he remembers when Eric and I, Steven's the baby.
Yeah.
When Eric and I were young, babies or whatever. And we would say, we're like, you can't remember that because you weren't born yet or you were only two.
Yeah.
Or,
and it was because he
and
watched
then it.
And
then it dawned on me, he remembers this because he's watched it
a
thousand times. He has seen his older brother David at age 4. Before he was even conceived.
Yeah.
He knows what I was like. And that becomes the memory.
That becomes the memory.
We want to see ourselves. We want to see what other people see.
The thing that's
fascinating
is what we see. And here's a completely different thing. I listened to a podcast and it was an interview with a woman who just wrote a book. I don't know who the woman is off the top of my head. But she's a scientist who has face blindness.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about these people.
You know,
yeah.
they just can't. And it affects more than just your ability to see faces. You can't.
Oh, yeah.
Your spatial distancing is weird. You have no geography. It completely changes. What was fascinating about it, and that's why I kind of want to get the book, was she knew. I mean, you know, she didn't have any reference points. She didn't know that anybody else saw the world differently than she did.
Mm-hmm.
She thought everybody saw things like that.
Yeah.
And just thought there was something wrong with her that was beyond that. You know, like she was hot and cold with her friends because sometimes she didn't recognize her friends. So she didn't pretend like she didn't know them.
That's a rough life.
You know, but in part of the interview, it was sort of this concept that I look at this coffee table and I know what it looks like to me, but there's no question in my mind that what you see is slightly different than what I see.
Have you ever read the book Einstein's Dreams?
Yeah.
So that kind of speaks to this, like
that's exactly
relativity
right.
and how different things can be. And I had this thought, I was young when I first had this thought, this idea of what I'm experiencing right now, like you were just saying, may be completely different than what you're experiencing. So for me right now, I'm sitting in your apartment. Here's this coffee table.
Yep.
Got my computer here. Here's our microphone. There's your chair.
There's the droid air conditioner.
And we're talking about what we're talking about. I sound the way I sound. You sound the way you sound. You look the way you look. But to you,
it's a totally different thing.
I might look. I might be 7 feet tall and 18 feet wide to you.
But
I might sound like a little. Yeah. You know, like,
and I
completely
would,
different.
And because I don't know how you see things and can't, I don't know there's any difference.
And there is no possible way to determine for sure what that is, what the reality is that each person is seeing, because no matter what we say or do, it's being perceived in a completely different way by the person that's receiving.
And to the heart of that, it's why I reject so vehemently postmodern thought.
Okay, go on.
Well, the essence of postmodern thought is that there is no objective reality. And this, what we're saying, really supports that, is that what I see is different from what you see. There is no objective truth from our perception of it. Our perception is always different.
Yeah.
But the problem I have with postmodern thought is that it expands into the concept that there are no objective realities of any kind. And whether that's true or not, for society to work, we have to have agreements on things. So, and I've said this before, but as an example, if none of us, if the color, the spectrum of light that we all have agreed is green, what you see as green might be slightly different than what I see as green.
Yeah.
But if we could, if we all have to agree that this particular light spectrum, that's going to be green.
Yeah.
And we all agree, because if we don't all agree, then traffic is going to be a fucker. Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, we're just be running fucking into each other like, a Michael Bay movie. And, you know, and so then you take it to bigger. It's like, okay, is there objectivity in journalism? Like a huge idea. Of course not. That doesn't mean we can't agree on what it looks like or what it should look like. Mm-hmm. You know, is there, you know, we've had this kind of, you're doing the seven Satanist questions a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we have to have some common agreements on what terms mean, or what we get is a postmodern chaos. And it's why the reimagining of language, you know, we're going to change our language. It's got to be a slower and more gradual thing, because if you don't have a plurality of people that agree on a change that you've decided this is important to make, if you don't have that plurality, then it's not going to work. Because if we don't all agree, sort of a consensus of agreement that this is how it's going to go, and we're all going to kind of play by this new rule book, then it's a waste. It's just,
well, that's like, you know, when one person says, well, you can't say that anymore. You can't say that word anymore. Or, you know.
Yeah.
Well, okay, why? Well, because it's not okay anymore. It means something else now. To who? To just you? Because the rest of my experience, my people in my life, they don't see that word. It's the story of the master.
Yeah, yes.
You know, like, I don't know if I've told this story in the Ape Cat, but like, so... do I even want to get into this right
now? Why not?
So, you know, formalities being what they were, you know, when a young man or a boy, like before they became a man, so like in for Jews, like before they get bar mitzvahed, they weren't Mr. I was not Mr. David Himmel. I was Master. Like Master Wayne.
Really? I've never heard that young Jewish men are, before their bar mitzvah, are called Master Himmel.
Well, it's not like, I don't know if that's like a hard rule, but like that's a young boy is like when Alfred calls Bruce Wayne, in other words, Master Wayne.
A young boy of a certain societal stratus?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, all right, that's like, fair. That's fair, okay.
He didn't call him Master Wayne because Bruce was his boss or his master. He called him Master Wayne because he was a boy, and that's just
what I always thought he called him Master Wayne because he was his fucking butler.
No. It's because he raised him as a boy, and as a boy, you know, it was Mr. Wayne and Mrs. Wayne and Master Wayne.
Wow, that's crazy. I didn't know that.
So,
that's interesting.
My mom sent Jacob a present through the mail, like Amazon, and came to our house, and it was sent to Master Jacob Himmel.
Sure.
Because mom is, you know, she's
playing the game. Yeah, sure. And that's kind of cute. And
so Katie had texted me, and this is obviously a while ago, but Katie had texted me, like, hey, do you mind talking to your mom about the master thing? And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll master the situation. I had no idea what she was talking about.
Yeah.
I saw the package and I
didn't. Well, because your frame of reference for that word made total sense. Yeah.
But then when I figured out what she was talking about, I was like, okay, yeah, I'll talk to mom and be like, you know, you don't have to do the Master Jacob Himmel. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
It makes no difference to me. And mom can now still send things to the house because Katie's not there anymore. It's not going to bother Katie.
Yeah.
But I understand, like, if it's bothersome to Katie, like, okay, fine, it's not a big deal. And I don't even know if I had the conversation with my mom. I don't know if I got around to it. But, like, I would have had the conversation, be like, just don't do it. The same way that, like, don't address Katie as Mrs. David Himmel.
Yeah.
That's an antiquated thing. That's not how we roll. She's Mrs. Katie Himmel. Or was Mrs.
David Himmel. Was Katie. Yeah.
Katie and I got in this discussion about it, and she was like, yeah, you can't use that word anymore. And I was like,
The word master.
And I'm like, look, I'll tell mom to like not address it to Master Jacob Himmel because it's antiquated. And
whatever.
What do you mean I can't use the word anymore? Well, because it's all attached to slavery.
No, it isn't, actually.
That's, I was like,
it was, but it's not.
I mean, I know that they used the word master. Like, that was, they used that word because they were the master of the people.
Sure.
That's stupid and horrible and whatever. But, like, they've changed in, when you're talking about real estate, it's no longer referred to as a master bedroom or master bathroom. It's primary bedroom, primary bathroom. And I'm fine with that.
Yeah, but.
Because I don't, like, change.
So what happens if you spend 10,000 hours and you become a master of that thing?
That's what I said. I said, like, so can, does Master Lock need to change the name of their company? She's like, well, they probably should.
I'm that's like, ridiculous. I'm sorry, that's just ridiculous.
If I master a situation or I become a master of knitting.
What I would say, and I get it.
Mastery is different than owning slaves.
Yes, and what I would also say is it's such a weird conflation of things is that, and I've had conversations like this where I'm told by someone in a minority status that I'm a white guy and I don't have any business talking about their plight.
Yeah.
It's not my business. And, you know, so you don't get to talk to us about anything about us, which is, you know, okay, that's fine. Then I won't talk to you about it. I don't give a shit. On the other hand, Katie and Katie's family and her entire lineage never experienced slavery. So what the fuck business is it hers?
I mean, if you...
Because I've never met someone, not that I walk around and going, hello, you are a black person. Ba-ba-ba-ba, master, just to see how they react. But I just can't imagine most black people give a shit.
But it's also the agreement of the word. Like, if it's a bugaboo for one person, like, okay, I won't use it around that one person because fine, you know, and if you want to be... You want to be identified as they, them, or whatever. I don't give a shit.
It's fine.
But, like, you mentioned a black person.
Yeah.
There was a time when they were called other things.
Oh, yeah.
And we all agree now, like, we don't call them those other things anymore. The N-word, colored, like, all that shit. We've moved on from that. We've evolved to kinder...
Well, I mean, adjectives. It's one of the funniest things.
You have to agree on it. It cannot be just the demand but of again, one person. That's not how language
is. It's like
acts.
I remember listening to Morgan Freeman being very angry because he hated the term African American.
Well, it doesn't make sense because some people...
He hated it.
Some black people aren't African descent.
And overwhelmingly, people will call them people of Katie's tribe.
Okay.
White liberal ladies.
Yeah.
Love Latinx or Latinx or Latinx or whatever. But almost everybody in the Latin community hates it.
Yeah.
It's like, you guys don't get it. Just because you decided you wanted to use it doesn't mean everybody needs to use it. Like, it's crazy.
Who's offended here? Who's bothered by it?
Yeah.
If it's not bothering the people...
I'll give you an example. When I was in Kansas and I was working for the radio station... Working in Kansas at the radio stations, and one of the stations was Radio Lobo, and it was the Hispanic station in town.
Radio Lobo.
Radio Lobo, that's how they said it. So that's how I said it.
Okay.
You know, maybe Radio Lobo. It's not like I'm saying caliente.
Yeah.
You know,
guacamole.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. That was what they called the radio station. Anyway, we did a thing called Chimps and Salsa.
Yeah.
And it was basically their version. They'd lost the Cinco de Mayo event at the zoo, so they rebranded it. But one of the things that was very funny is when I went up, because I'm getting all the stuff ready for the event, and there were a stack of like 30 sombreros.
Jesus.
Right?
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I am in Kansas. Mm-hmm. So I went down and I talked to Valentin. He was one of the DJs. I said, Do we use the fucking sombreros? He goes, oh yeah, the people love it. I said, the white people? He goes, no. The Mexican people love those sombreros.
Yeah.
They always want to buy them. And I was like, oh, it just hadn't even occurred to me
yeah.
that that was a reality. And it was like, okay, you know, and it is the sum total of people telling people what to think from sort of a place of moral certitude.
Yeah.
Is just such a dead stick. It's such a wrong thing. We get it wrong so much,
yeah.
So often. And
it's this commitment to my way is the way.
Yeah, yeah. It's a zealotry. It's an orthodoxy that can't be avoided.
Truth is a shared experience with very different outcomes. This is ultimately why my marriage didn't work out, is because we were living in the happening truth, but what we saw as the outcome of what was happening was very different.
Like very different
very
things,
different
yeah.
realities.
Yeah.
And when we would communicate, we communicated in just very different ways.
Yeah.
And it makes for a really, really hard life.
Well, it's you know? Going back to the data, we're talking about the data. It goes to the heart of data. What I always, because when WP started doing data shows, they did Swari Data with Joel Jeske and then kind of branched off. It became just nonsense for the sake of nonsense, right? And it was, to me, it just started looking like bad fake German improv, and it was just bullshit, you know. It was just becoming random shit, and it wasn't a very entertaining show. And I was like, so I canceled the show, which pissed everybody off. And then we had some meetings, and I said, all right, well, it was like, you know, just like fucking around. And so I said, all right, let's do it, but I want it to be a written and directed show. I don't want any of that shit just made up. I want us to be intentional. And one of the things that it made the show angry. It wasn't an angry show. It was sort of a confrontational show, but it wasn't an angry show until we started introducing the idea that they were speaking nonsense, but they had every actor, every Dadaist had to have something that they really were trying to say to the audience, but could not use the real words. And I kept pushing that agenda, and what it became is that I'm trying to say this thing to you, you fucking moron in the audience, and you can't understand. And what we do in English, and we're talking to somebody that does not speak English, we speak slower. Right. And if they don't understand, we get angry. Well, that's what the Dada is. So the Dada became very angry because they were speaking a language the entire audience could not understand, but what they were trying to say was really important.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're talking about. You're saying something, she was saying something, but you both were talking in a language that neither one could interpret.
And it doesn't just happen in marriages. I mean,
no, it happens
at the office with people. I mean, it's all the time. And then the other side of it is that you'll find people that you don't have to say shit.
And they just get it.
You just kind of get it.
Yeah. And then that's Dada speaks Dada. You know, Dada e speak Dada.
Like, and that comes from just the randomness of the universe and who we are. It comes from time.
Yep.
It comes from shared experiences where you just kind of like, you meet people, you find your people.
Yeah.
And you just connect and you get it. And that's easy. You know, and these are like, when you find those people, like, these are the ones that become the people you give kidneys to.
Yeah. You know? Kidney people. I don't know if I ever said this on the APS either, but yeah, that's one of my, that's how I take friendship, very seriously. And part of that is because I have massive trust issues now. and for good reason.
You got a good history.
Well, just not to get too deep into it, but one of the things that I realized, I was telling a story to a person I work with about, somehow we got on this, and I was telling her the story about my friend in high school, Ryan Berger. And Ryan Berger, as I was describing how he used me and how he took advantage of me and how I wanted to be his, I wanted to be his friend. I thought he was cool. We were having a great time. We enjoyed each other, but I always paid. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, and it was just this very transactional relationship until he really fucking exposed what a piece of shit liar he was. And I realized, holy fuck, how many of those occurrences have happened to me in my life? And I can count like 9 different occasions where I had somebody that I really revered that I was really taken advantage of. And I went, oh, I've been living Dana my whole life. Mm-hmm. It's inevitable that that's what that was going to happen.
Yeah.
So in that regard, going to the kidney thing, is that I have two kinds of what I would call friends.
Mm-hmm.
There are the kidney friends, you know, and those are the people that if they needed a limb or an organ or I would have it cut right out of my body and hand it over, you know,
yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
And then everybody else.
Yeah.
That's just kind of how it works.
Well, and then you can have, you know, and these people, those nine people.
Yeah.
May have started out with, or it quickly became.
Yeah.
We speak the same language. We get each other. We are in it together. Like these, we're ride or die forever.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And then sometimes things change. You know,
and I think, like, well, I look back at all of these people and I think the intent was always there that they were just kind of people that were takers.
Okay.
They were takers. Yeah, and I've got a thing where I like to be useful to people. And because yeah. I was perpetually the new kid, you know, latch on to somebody that's maybe a little different and cool and I enjoy their company. And sometimes, not always, but I would say, you know, more than half the time when I get somebody that I really, really like want to be friends with, because I do it with friends, same thing I do with women. I love people that don't like me. I'm very attracted to people that just do not care for me at all. And then my game is, you will like
you
me.
You will, yeah.
And it's like, all right, I got to quit. I'm stopping doing. I'm not going to do that anymore.
Yeah.
But it was just when I revealed that when Dana, the divorce from Dana was a very eye-opening experience. And I think the pain of that has been very cathartic.
Mm-hmm.
And in how I see my relationship to the world. So yeah, that's.
There was a girl that I met. This is back when I was living in Las Vegas. Her name was Wheezy, probably still is.
Wheezy?
It was a nickname.
It was like Louise.
No, her real name was Sarah. I don't know. I don't even remember where Wheezy came from. It's just what
she was asthmatic.
No, it was just
as a kid.
It was just a thing. I don't think so. No,
she had a high-pitched laugh that went.
Not even.
I don't even know. Yeah, easy. Anyway.
But we met, my buddy at the time, my friend John, he was a bouncer at Rain Nightclub.
Okay.
At the Palms Casino. I don't know if it's still there. Doesn't matter.
Well, Palms, yeah. It's not there anymore.
But like Rain was like the place that everybody went at this time. And so John, one night, he was like, hey, I'm off. Do you guys, me and my buddy Chris and John, he's like, do you guys want to come in, we'll get like, I'll get us in like VIP. We'll just, and we weren't club people, but it's like, fuck it. We're going to get
VIP. Let's do it. Yeah.
Let's do it. So as we're walking in, there was this gaggle of girls, all cute, like right at the entrance.
A gaggle.
And John was a walk on of the UNLV football team, big dude. And he like just opened his arms and was like, you ladies want to come to VIP? And they were like, okay. So like, here's these three guys and this, like, these eight
men. A gaggle, yeah.
And we go up to VIP and we're, you know, we're chatting with them and whatever. And I start talking with this Wheezy girl. Super cute chick, totally, like, and I'm immediately just like, boo, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm chatting with them. We're just talking all night, just going back and forth. And it was just like, it was magic. And at the end of the night, I think we swapped numbers and at least emails because we became, like, messenger chat
people.
Pals.
Sure. You know?
And email friends, and, like, we were sending each other pictures, like, through the mail, like, printed out photographs. Yeah. But my buddy Chris said that night, he goes, I have never seen a girl go toe-to-toe with you like that. Like, the wit, the quick, the just... And I was like, yeah, that was something special. So Wheezy and I became very... And they were from Michigan. We became very close, and I was committed to making this girl fall in love with me and marrying her because she was just so amazing.
Yeah.
And we just got each other.
That's what happened.
And like, I flew out to Detroit to see a show, a rock show, and I stayed with her and we went to the show together. And then she came to Vegas and visited, and then she came to Chicago. We came to Chicago one summer for a bit over the summer.
Did you ever knock boots or?
What's that?
Did you ever have sex?
I'm getting there.
Okay.
And again, like every
time that sounds like, sounds like a really good friendship.
Is this happening? Like, I feel like there's moments where it might be happening, but I don't know. And she ended up moving to Las Vegas, and I let her stay with me for a bit until she, you know, found a job and got on her feet and all this other shit. And then I did this thing where I was going to Australia for 2 weeks for a friend's wedding. And I was traveling with my buddy Greg. We were going down there together. And I invited Wheezy to come to fucking Australia with me.
Yeah.
And she did. And I don't know what happened, but something happened in Australia. And she was not the person that she had been. And I couldn't fucking stand her. And I don't think she could stand me. And it was just like something just changed. And we did not, we never had a fight.
Yeah, I know what it
but
was.
But it just, what was it?
She didn't hock Tua on your cock.
She did not.
And now, WorSack of the News.
In Chicago has great food. Chicago-style pizza, Chicago dogs, Italian beef, dipped, of course. But don't drink the water.
Yep.
Boil order lifted for Beverly, Morgan Park, and Auburn Gresham.
Yeah, yeah. We've got lead. We've got, you know, it's, you know, the thing is, we've.
This is like the third time they've gone on a boil order in like, what, a year, 2 years, something that?
Yeah, yeah.
Less?
But what is also fascinating to me is, because Paris is Chicago's sister city, and
what?
Yeah, Paris, France is the sister city to Chicago. It's the same.
What does that even mean?
It's the same. It's the same architecture, not architecture, but like the city plan is very similar.
Oh,
and
okay.
And we are officially right. But what's really interesting is that Paris has had to spend I don't even know how many billions of dollars because their sewer system.
Oh.
Overflow when it rains heavy, it overflows into the river, and they can't do the Olympics there if they're just shit.
Yeah,
and so yes, we have undrinkable water because it's filled with lead and E. coli and all this other bullshit, and they just have rivers of shit.
How does this? So third boil order in 3 years.
Yeah,
what year is this? I look at my watch as if the fucking This is 2024.
It is.
We've put a man on the moon. There are how many videos being uploaded every day? 54 bazillion, whatever the fuck you said.
Yeah.
And we can't get decent drinking water to people in Beverly?
Here's the thing.
The fuck is going on?
We put a man on the moon the same year that they built the water system in Chicago. So that's how fucking long it's been since they've updated it, and that's why it's fucked up.
God, Jesus. Honey, on your way home tonight, can you swing by the Jewels and grab some milk and 50 rounds for our AK? Bread and bullets. Some southern supermarkets now sell ammo out of vending machines.
In Alabama, I saw this. I'm glad I don't live in Alabama. I mean, Jesus Christ, you can order bullets through a vending machine.
Bro, Oklahoma, and Texas.
Oh my God. I thought Vegas was bad because you could get a slice of cake from a vending machine.
Yeah.
Which you knew is shitty cake. It had to be shitty cake.
What I love about
this is bullets.
What I love about this is the CEO of the company, American Rounds LLC. Yeah. What does he say here? He goes, ammunition is traditionally sold off the shelf. It just sits openly like boxes of cereal at a grocery store. Okay. So in a weird way, this is a silly argument, but it kind of makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
In a vending machine kind of...
But here's what... This is what I want.
Locks it up a little bit.
Look, here's what I want to see. I want
to
see...
It's harder to steal.
I want to see the guy who really wants his bullets... And he puts in his $20 and it doesn't drop. And he like
and just
starts hitting it. God damn it. It stole my
shaking the thing.
Yeah, that's what I want to see.
And remember when Woody Allen nearly broke his jaw going down on Shelley Duvall?
Ha
Shelley Duvall, Robert Altman protege and tormented wife in The Shining, and olive oil in the Robin Williams vehicle Popeye.
Yes, the Robert Altman.
That's right. Yeah, it was an Altman film. Yep.
Yeah.
She's dead. 75 years old. Yeah.
There you go.
What's weird, too... Sorry, this is your Rorschach.
It's fine. No, I just... She's a tragic figure. She had her time. She was in a lot of Altman stuff. I thought she was a great actor. She was so unique and so specific.
Yeah.
But Kubrick really fucked her up.
Yeah.
I mean, he fucked her up.
Yeah.
He was so shitty to her during The Shining that it stuck with her. It would traumatize her for the rest of her life. And it's like, that is such a shame. It's one of the things, I think The Shining is one of the, it's a masterpiece, but that one's a hard one for me to watch anymore.
Yeah.
Because I know how shitty the director was to this poor fucking woman.
Yeah. It's interesting because, like, again, just the way, like, sometimes the universe works or God is listening, you know, whatever the fuck it is. Kismet, happenstance, I don't know. A couple months ago, I feel like there was a story that came out. I don't remember what it was in, but it was about Shelley Duvall. And, like, where has she been and what's she doing?
Yeah.
That she might be getting back into acting. On top of that, 2-3 days ago, I was talking to Harry about The Shining.
Okay.
Because he was watching a movie and it made a joke with the Red Rum, like with the twins. And he was like, that's funny. And I was like, that is funny. He's like, but it's also kind of creepy. I was like, yeah. I said, and it's from this movie, The Shining. And I explained to him, like, and it's from a book, Stephen King. And he was like, and I told him about what The Shining is about. And he was like, oh, that sounds really scary. And I was like, yeah, but it's really good. And when you're older, we could watch it together. He's like, yeah, I'd like to do that. But not now. It's kind of freaking out. I'm like, yeah, when you're older. And if you want, like, scary stories that are really well done and really interesting, Stephen King's your guy, Harry.
Yeah.
And I will introduce you. And Don should introduce you to Stephen King, because Stephen King is Don's guy.
I love Stephen
King. And he was, like, totally into it. But it was just funny, like, that we were talking about Shelley Duvall, and then she just fucking drops dead on us. Asshole. In The Rich Will Still Get Richer, inflation eased further in June, helping cement path to rate cuts.
You know, as someone who doesn't make enough money to give a shit,
that's why
I really don't give a shit. You know, I mean, that's the thing is, you can throw all this, you can have, oh, the Dow is up. I don't give a fuck. Yeah. I don't make enough fucking money. I'd live check to check.
Yeah.
So what? Of course the rich are going to get rich. That's why they stay rich.
Speaking of, in Trump always only had eyes for one young girl. His daughter. Trump and Jeffrey Epstein, no links shown in latest documents.
Like, so he wasn't, Bill Clinton was linked, and Stephen Hawking was linked, but Trump has no link to Jeffrey Epstein?
So, yeah, there's a Democratic lawmaker, this is a subhead, this is in the Washington Post, a Democratic lawmaker in social media posts mischaracterized Trump's relationship with the deceased sex predator. So they knew each other. There's pictures.
Yeah, but
you know,
he didn't like...
But apparently he was never on the plane or on the island or anything like that. There's no, like, damning evidence.
So it was all...
Like, surprisingly, so it was Trump all the, didn't do
like,
something
like
shitty.
All the good Democrats were friends of Jeffrey Epstein on his island.
Yeah, our heroes.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but yeah.
Trump did something not skeevy.
I know, like, good for him.
Yeah, gotta give him some
credit where credit's due.
Heck yeah.
It's a good thing those rate cuts we just talked about are coming. Costco is raising membership fees. Don't worry, hot dogs cost the same.
Yeah. It's going from 60 to 65. It's a $5 increase. Everybody can calm the fuck down. It's Costco. I love this guy. I love the guy that runs Costco.
Have you ever been to Costco?
Yeah, my mom in Kansas, that's where she buys everything, is Costco. And
I have never stepped foot in a Costco.
Oh, they're awesome.
Hearing that. When I started working at August Jackson...
August Wilson?
August Wilson. The lady that hired me, I mentioned, in conversation, I was like, yeah, you know, I've never been to a Costco. She's like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
Costco's... No, I'm taking you. Like, we are going to... And we never went to Costco.
Costco's awesome. The only reason I don't have...
They sell caskets there.
They sell fucking everything there, man. Yeah, Costco rocks.
Wow! And it's Rainey's quote of the week. To ponder as you consider life for pressing choices.
The quote of the week is from Mr. James Baldwin. Master James Baldwin.
Well, he'd be a mister.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say master.
He's a grown man.
Yeah, he's black, so I'm going to call him Master
James Baldwin. No, you can't use that word.
No one is more dangerous than he who imagines himself pure in heart, for his purity, by definition, is unassailable.
Hmm. This sounds like it speaks to the know-it-alls out there.
The self-righteous know-it-alls.
The self-righteous know-it-alls.
Yeah.
Can you be a know-it-all without being self-righteous?
No.
Yeah. They go hand in hand. Yeah. And you can't tell them. You can't call them on their bullshit.
Well, that's what he's saying. Yeah. By definition, because the purity by definition is unassailable.
Well, if I was an asshole about it, I would know.
What I like about it is he uses two words in this sentence that I think are intentionally ingenious. No one is more dangerous than he who imagines himself pure at heart. Mm-hmm. And it is the heart of where danger lies in people who imagine themselves to be better than, smarter than, set apart, keepers of some sort of pure idea, like
Hitler.
Hitler, like the men who don't like to hock to a girl because she's mm-hmm. filthy. Mm-hmm. You don't like the white liberal women that think you shouldn't use the word master.
Mm-hmm.
You fucking know-it-alls. You're more dangerous than me.
Yeah, because you're unwilling to hear a different perspective and really consume it and sit with it and analyze how it affect. Dangerous people.
There are six things you should do this week.
All right, my first thing this week is a watch. I went into a deep rabbit hole, man. I'm so excited for Severance
season to come out. Yeah.
Okay, watch Severance season one. If you haven't watched it,
you're gonna watch it.
Watch it again.
It's a concept piece that is so well executed.
Goddamn it! So I watched it, like I binged it this weekend, and then the other day the new trailer dropped with a release date, which I was like, oh my god, okay. But I watched it and then just like into like was watching YouTube videos about like what is the ending. Like I just got fucking nerdy and mm-hmm. dumb. It is, it's just such a goddamn good show. The concept is brilliant. It is scary. It is funny. It is real. It's, oh my God.
It's a big think piece.
So good.
Speaking of good, my first thing is also a watch. It's on Amazon Prime. This came out, last year sometimes, and I just didn't have a chance to see it. And I went, oh, I can watch it on Amazon Prime now. Bottoms.
Mm.
It's fucking funnier than shit.
What is it about? Who is it?
Basically, it's Rachel Sennett and Io, can't think of her last name, the woman that's from Sydney on The Bear. But basically, and they're both like comedy, you know.
It's a movie or TV show?
It's a movie.
Okay.
And basically, it is these two lesbian high school students who, in order to get laid by the cheerleaders, start a girls' fight club and have no business, you know, they're just beating the shit out of each other. There's just like holes, and like all the football players wear their football uniforms all the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's genuinely super smart. You know, it's not obnoxious. It's sort of over the top, but not obnoxiously so. And it's really fucking funny. Okay. I thoroughly enjoyed it and I highly recommend it.
Oh yeah, it's got what's her name?
Io.
Io Edebiri.
Yeah.
Ed Beery.
She's awesome.
She's so great.
She's really good. Yeah. Super good.
My second thing this week is a read in The Atlantic by Mark Leibovich. Come on, man. That's the headline. Come on, man. Yeah. The Biden saying. Yeah. And it's a short read. It is hilarious. It is. He's having such a fun time calling Biden out on this bullshit.
Yeah.
Of staying in the race.
Yeah.
Like, did you fucking hear? He was at the NATO summit thing, or he was introducing President Zelensky.
He called him President Putin.
President Putin.
And then in the NATO press conference that followed up, he referred to Vice President Kamala Harris as Vice President Trump.
Dude.
Come on, man. Yeah, fuck. Exactly. Yeah. My second thing is also a read. It is in the Free Press. You and I think our divorces are bad. Oh, I got one for you. A wife's revenge from beyond the grave. Caught in a brutal divorce, Catherine Kazanoff committed medically assisted suicide. Then the campaign to destroy her ex-husband truly began, by Francesca Block. This is a fucking saga of two people who should have never gotten married.
Jesus.
And depending on who you want to believe, either or both of them are pathological in their own way. And Jesus Christ.
What is it called?
It is called A Wife's Revenge from Beyond the Grave. This is it's a long read, but Jesus Christ, it is just.
And where can I find this?
In the Free Press. Free Press, it's like fp.com or something.
Wow. Wow. Yeah,
seriously. It is just one of those things I was just like glued. It's well written, but the fucking story is just like, it's almost like, what the fuck? This was, I want to say this divorce was like New York famous because it took like 15 years before she committed suicide. And in her will, she instructed her attorney to continue to sue for divorce proceedings after she died.
Wow.
This is one fucked up story.
Yikes.
Yeah.
My last thing this week is another read. It's in The Guardian. It's by Anita Chaudhuri. Sorry, Anita. The cult of 5 a.m. Is rising at dawn the secret of health and happiness? I don't think she thinks so. She was struggling with it. You and I thrive in this.
This shit
works for us.
Yeah, it works for me. I like getting up at 5 a.m. Because I've got a couple hours just to fucking be alive, get some workout done, writing done,
you start the day right, coffee. You're productive before the day gets in and fucks everything up.
I love it. Yeah, right. And my third thing is, again, a watch. Yorgos Lanthimos. I love my Yorgos. In theaters right now, Kinds of Kindness. It is one funny fucking, but this is what I'll say. Yorgos is a very specific flavor of pizza. And if you don't like that flavor, don't go see his movies because it's just going to piss you off. It's weird. It is intentionally strange. It's super smart. It's three different stories. All the performances are great. Jesse Plemons is hysterically funny in these.
He's so great.
Emma Stone is great. Willem Dafoe is the star. As far as I'm concerned, Willem Dafoe is the best thing in this movie.
Willem Dafoe has grown on me a lot.
He's so good in this because he's really having a lot of fun. That's the thing that I got is that he's really having fun playing characters in this particular film, but I loved it. You know, it's like Yorgos.
He was a lot of fun in Stupid Things. No, what was it? Simple Things, Simple
Creatures. Poor Things.
Poor Things.
Poor Things. Yeah. Yorgos has found it sort of an ensemble cast he likes.
Yeah,
this is a very fun movie. I enjoyed it, and I recommend it to anybody. Kindness.
All right, we have our things. Let's get to it.
You can listen to the Literate ApeCast on literateape.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you go to get that delicious podcast experience. If you enjoy the dulcet sounds of two white guys babbling about whatever comes into their stunted brains, leave us a review anywhere that, reviews are left, and share it with someone whom which you have a dubious relationship.
For information about Literate Ape, go to literateape.com, of course, and check out the rest of our podcasts and our years of scribbling. Music on the ApeCast is courtesy of Mike Finopel and Locomotive. You can find them all over Chicago and online at locomotiveband.com.
The fuck?